You actually have, you know, the Native Americans asking the frontiersmen to teach them to make rum from corn, which is basically teaching them how to make whiskey. So, you know, rum was kind of the early spirit that helped develop the taste for distilled spirits here in the New World, and whiskey kind of took over when you got into the West, where you couldn't get a hold of sugarcane and such like they could on the East Coast.
It was actually, I know there were bourbon distillers in Virginia, for example.
Right. Yeah, there still is. You know, Virginia Gentleman is still out there.
And then it kind of migrated west, of course,
right,
into Kentucky. Why did it flourish? We talk about Kentucky bourbon now, not Virginia bourbon. Why did it flourish so well here?
Well, I always tell people that it's geography. When you came down the Ohio River, there wasn't any sign in the river, you know, saying if you have a still, settle on the south bank. So there was actually, you know, bourbon on both sides of the river early on, you know, bourbon distillers, people making whiskey. But what made Kentucky flourish is a combination of the limestone water, you know, which is iron-free. Because if you have iron, it's bad for any distilled spirit. It gives it a very off taste if you have iron in your water. Then you've got hot summers and cold winters. And, you know, you've got a lot of water sources in Kentucky, you know, a lot of springs. And a lot of these come out on a hillside, and which makes it very easy to gravity feed your water into your distillery, you know, things like that. Later on, where bourbon is most predominant, it's also an area where you have a lot of Catholics. You know, you don't have the religious stigma in those areas on distilling that you have in, you know, some of the southern parts of the state or something, you know, the real deep Bible Belt type counties.
I got to hand it to the first person who discovered that if you char the inside of the barrel, you're making something very special, something very different from your traditional whiskeys. How did that come about?
Kentucky whiskey early on wasn't selling in New Orleans for a profit. So someone got the idea, why aren't they drinking our whiskey? And the answer is that for the most part, these are Frenchmen. And what are they drinking? They're drinking cognac, Armagnac, French brandy. What makes it different is that French brandy is aged in charred barrels. So someone said, let's make our whiskey taste more like French brandy. And I always challenge people, take a glass of bourbon, a glass of cognac, and a glass of any single malt scotch you want, and tell me which two taste most alike. You know, I've yet to have anyone say that bourbon tastes like single malt scotch.
In the practice, the skills actually kept on migrating west. I recently tried some bourbon that was distilled in California. I'm not saying I liked it better than the Kentucky bourbons, but, you know, it's out there and it's being made there.
Right. Bourbon does not have to be made in Kentucky. It is a product of the United States. You could make it in Hawaii if you wanted to.
Now, and bourbon's development, I guess evolution, is very tightly tied into the country's. Why that link it? How is it that American history has become so tightly tied in with the evolution of bourbon?
You know, you can trace the technological advances of the nation through bourbon. By looking, you know, bourbon started off as the stereotypical cottage industry with the farmer distiller. And by the end of the 19th century, you have the big, you know, whiskey distillers using column stills that are steam-powered and things like that. You know, the transportation system, bourbon had a big effect on the railroads in Kentucky because a lot of railroads went to where the distilleries were because that was one of their big customers for shipping out product out of the state. You look at the evolution of marketing. You know, the term brand name comes from branding your name on the end of your barrel, you know. And before the government had a system for trademarks, the distilling industry was registering their trademarks in their own trade magazines in order to, you know, stake their claims to different brands and such.
it also contributed in a way to big government. I mean, the tax structure of this nation was in large part driven by folks trying to figure out a way to get revenue out of whiskey, out of bourbon.
Right. You know, there was the first constitutional crisis was, you know, the Whiskey Rebellion. But that tax was actually repealed in 1802 when Thomas Jefferson was elected on a plank that he was going to balance the federal budget and eliminate the whiskey tax. And he did just that in 1802. But when the Civil War broke out, they brought the whiskey tax back. And it's been with us ever since. Without the passage of the income tax amendment, Prohibition never could have happened because the whiskey tax was paying, I've heard, anywhere from 50% to 70% of the federal budget before the income tax came along. And it was only after that tax came along and gave them another source of money that the government could even consider prohibition.
And 50 years ago, the U.S. Congress declared that only bourbon could be distilled in the United States. It's written in the law. I suspect it's also written into trade agreements.
Right. As a matter of fact, it was put into law as part of a trade agreement, you know, with people like Scotland. You know, Scotch can only be made in Scotland, and France, only cognac could be made in France, and things like that.
And so the same law that works to protect champagne protects bourbon in this country.
That's correct.
And this is a little tougher for a historian to decide. What's bourbon doing for the country these days? What's the distillation of bourbon contributing? How's it contributing to our society now?
Oh, it's still paying a huge amount of taxes. Jim Beam, I'm sure, writes a check for, you know, several million dollars to the government every 2 weeks based on their taxes. When you pay $10 for a bottle of distilled spirits, about $7 of that is taxes. You know, besides that, you know, it's one of the few products that is still made in the United States that other countries want, so it's helping our trade deficit.
So when Congress gets around to balancing the budget, they'll have a much harder time of it if it wasn't for bourbon.
Oh, yes. And I always tell people, if you want to help the deficit, go out and buy more bourbon.
Mr. Veach, thanks for your help.
Okay.